Well, hello, wine lovers. Welcome to Some Women Talk Wine. I'm Christy, the nerdy one, and today I'm going to be leading our discussion by myself. Charisse is out taking a well-needed break from our podcast execution. So today I'm really thrilled to introduce the subject of viticultural practices around sustainable, organic, and biodynamic, but most importantly, we have special guests from Greystone Vineyards in New Zealand joining us to really give you real life examples of how these things come into play in not only their vineyard management, but also in their wines. So let's get started.
Welcome to
Some Women Talk Wine.
I'm Christy, your resident wine nerd, educator, and blogger.
And I'm Charisse, your street smarts service guru.
Join us each episode as we translate nerdy wine tips
into savvy wine tricks. Real talk without all the fruits and fluff. Because
some women talk wine. Go ahead and dive right into the subject of the day. Regenerative, sustainable, organic agriculture and viticulture and winemaking. So in my studies, I've deep dived several of these topics, and I can truly tell you that they are confusing, but I like to try to break it down in the simplest of manners and just get down to one sentence definitions of each. So for sustainable, this is not a process where all chemicals are eliminated in the vineyard, etc. But what's important about it is their use is minimized or restricted as much as possible. So they will analyze based upon weather, when the rain is coming, so that the chemicals that they're using to prevent rots and fungus and mildews are used at those times and not just on a calendar or, you know, weekly schedule. Same thing goes for fertilizers and other chemicals that might have traditionally been used. So in other words, it's controlled use, very specific to timing versus elimination of chemical use. Now, organic is even more complicated because almost every single country has a different certification for organics. So it's not just this wine is organic in the US or this wine is organic in France or New Zealand. You really have to know what the regulations are for each of those individual countries in order to understand what organic truly means. Typically, they will have a stamp or a seal on the label if they have actually gone through organic certification. But if a winery is exporting a lot of wines, they may or may not actually want to get certified, because what means organic certification in one country where they might produce their wine may be dramatically different and not even qualify as organic in the country they're exporting to. So many wineries actually follow organic principles, but just don't have the formal certifications on their labels to back it up. So when you see that they produce in an organic way, you've got to trust that they're really following the rules based upon the country in which they're operating. So it does get a little bit tricky. Organic is not organic across all of the markets. But what we're going to spend the most time today talking about with Greystone is biodynamic agriculture. And this, to me, is absolutely where the magic comes in. So years and years ago, Rudolf Steiner and Maria Thun created this philosophy around cosmology, philosophy, and it really is a connection of the earth with the cosmos and all these other elements. So it sounds a little wacky, it sounds a little crazy, but it's really looking at the cycles of the sun, the cycles of the moon, the cycles of the stars, and creating these homeopathic remedies, what they call preparations, and really looking at biodynamics as a way for vineyard management. Regenerative is the fourth. And to me, this is really taking into account how the land, animals, flora, fauna, soil, the vines all intersect. And as we're getting ready to talk to the folks at Greystone, I love how they talk about it. It all starts with a regenerative mindset. So crop management is done by hand without herbicides, insecticides, fungicides. They use organic methods and regenerative agriculture. So they're really promoting soil and vine health. Now, what really struck me about my visit to New Zealand is without prompting, nearly every single vineyard we visited had the principle of wanting to leave the land better than they found. So the interview is going to start off out in the vineyard. Stephen McGowan took us up to the highest point so we could really get a fair view, actually a bird's eye view, of the layout of the vineyards. And you can really start to see how regenerative farming and regenerative agriculture comes into play. The vineyards looked completely unlike any other large vineyard in very structured rows, and Stephen will go into explaining why. And he'll also share a little bit about the styles of wine that they're making, primarily Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. And we'll get into some really, really fun elements of how they're taking regenerative almost to the next level, not only with their wines, but also the flora and fauna and creatures on the vineyard land itself. So what you'll hear today from the team at Greystone, specifically Stephen McGowan, sales and marketing director, and Gavin Tate, who is a winemaker, is that every single thing they do is involving the principles of regenerative farming and winemaking.
It's very special on this particular site is we have limestone over clay and clay over limestone. So we're not trying to make Burgundian style wines, but if you looked at our soil profiles as such, or
right,
we do have a lot of that similarities.
Right, just terroir is gifting it to you. 100%,
100%. Okay. And limestone in New Zealand, there's not a huge amount of it. We've got quite a distinct limestone that's more a conglomerate. It's not the classic limestone that you think of Chablis, where you've got that beautiful, you know, chalky white.
Mm-hmm.
If you actually head over to Waikare, where you've got Bell Hill and Pyramid Valley, mm-hmm, you do have more of that style of limestone. We actually have more of a conglomerate of fossilized seashells, limestone, loess, clay, all fused together. And when we get up the top, I'll find a block.
Okay.
I'll show you.
That sounds maybe a little more, you know, being from Texas, we do have limestone, but it is definitely not the pure white limestone that you get in either Champagne or Burgundy. It has a little bit more yellow and complexity to it.
Our clays are also quite unique as well, and only found in this area. But what it means from a winemaking perspective is limestone gives you finesse, elegance, me, that driven minerality, that fine line acidity, and then clay puts all the flesh on the bones and gives you structure and palate weight and concentration, and you combine the two and you've got this beautiful perfect balance of finesse and structure, which is what makes a fine wine for me anyway.
Wow. That's a beautiful expression.
This is our highest limestone block. So this is called the Thomas Brothers, and the Chardonnay is called the Erin. So we probably make 150 cases of each. So all of our wines, the Greystone Estate, are single vineyard. These are actually single block.
Okay.
This is Pinot, and then the Chardonnay is 100% Mendoza. So these wines retail 130, okay, 135. So,
well, look ahead of us. We have some sheep.
Comes through, and it just, if you had, it dries the grapes. It keeps them super dry, so we don't get too much powdery mildew. We don't get too much downy mildew. What it also means is you end up with quite small grapes with thick skins because they're just constantly being battered by the wind. So you get a very structural style of Pinot Noir. Quite a concentrated style.
Even for Pinot Noir you get a thicker skin because of the wind.
Because of the wind.
Oh, interesting.
Smaller berries, thicker skin, which means more juice, more skin to juice ratio. Mm-hmm. Now if you were to manhandle the grapes, you're going to end up with something that's probably a little bit too tannic, I'm guessing. But our Don's winemaking style is hands-off. Let the vineyard do the work. So we end up with these beautiful probably a little bit light when you look at them in terms of you're thinking Californian or Australian Pinot, but with tons of structure. So you get that lovely lightness, elegance, finesse, and lots of structure at the same time, which for me is the magic of Pinot Noir, right?
Right. So it sounds, I mean, when you say light, are you talking about the color. Light color? Yeah. So almost in a way, sort of like if you think of Piedmont, you think of Nebbiolo. A lot of it may look light in some ways, and then it just, it's like explodes in your mouth.
You haven't got that the tannin profile of Nebbiolo, but you've certainly got, for example, our Thomas Brothers, that block that we saw back there, when you drink it young, it's got tannin. It's got grippy. So much grip to it. And then as it ages, it just softens and is beautiful, structured, deep, rich Pinot, which is what, again, that fine wine aspect. You don't buy a fine wine to drink the first year it was put in a bottle, do you?
Right.
You want to be able to cellar it. So Aaron's and Thomas Brothers really are those styles of wines. But we can jump out.
No
ripeness. So no. Your sweet, your sugars, and if just as long as
tannin and color,
as long as you're picking based on phenolics and not on sugars, you're not going to get those overinflated. Some people love those styles of wine, so I'm not putting them down. Some people want, you know, 14.5-15% alcohol, jammy stuff. Drink Shiraz,
exactly. Oops. One additional question around the nor'easter.
Nor'wester.
I'm so used to, we have nor'easters. Nor'wester. So does that challenge you either like at fruit set? Do you lose any from that?
I wouldn't say from the wind. Inclement weather is a challenge here for fruit set. Our biggest viticultural challenge is frost. So the dams that you'll see on the property, we use a sprinkler system for frost.
Yep.
All New Zealand viticulture, really. Mechanized, planted square.
Planted
with your standard rows so that you can machine pick. You know what yield you're going to get. Again, nothing wrong with that. Greystone's actually been planted contoured to the land.
I can see that.
Based on rootstock and clone. So we've got maybe 6 or 7 different Burgundy clones on the property, and I think of that as Dom's jigsaw puzzle, because he can pull all those clones together. And you know, some clones have got more structure, some have got more fruit, some are going to give you more tannin, some are going to give you more acid, and you can actually blend those together.
Well, and doing it in all of a, on a principle of organics, you know those vines are going to be healthy, you know they're going to be thriving
and resilient. How do I put it? So we want to go beyond sustainability. I think sustainability, and again, this is just my opinion, has lost all meaning. I think it's greenwashing. Is anyone can say they're sustainable. But what we're trying to do is go beyond that. How do we actually enrich the land? How can we regenerate our soils? Better than yesterday. And through regenerative viticulture, through the high wire trellising system. If you've got sheep in your vineyard all year round, their natural grazing habits improves nutrient cycling, because obviously they're going to eat, they're going to poop.
Yeah.
That just puts nutrients into the soil. So you're improving your soil quality with your lawnmowers. That's going to give you more resilient, stronger vines. I was talking to Mike the other day. We've only actually ordered the regen block once this year, because that additional humus and mat of grasses and things locks in more water, so you get less evaporation.
Especially
as well.
If you're doing crimping, you know.
Yeah. So we don't mow it at all. The regen block.
The sheep just do
everything.
They
did leaf plucking, sucker shoots, absolutely everything.
Cheap labor, and at the end of the day,
and you get to eat later.
I'm in sales, obviously, that's my role, and actually having that additional revenue stream of putting the lambs through the restaurants, amazing. And then imagine once we've lifted the whole entire vineyard, if we can reduce our diesel usage, which translates to emissions, across the whole vineyard. We're 58 hectares. That's massive, right? And then if we're actually farming those 58 hectares as well with lamb, the water that we're using on the vines when we are watering is actually then being used to grow the lambs as well. So you're utilizing the vineyard in
it's full circle.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. And growing stronger, more resilient vines. That in theory are going to give you better, higher quality grapes that are more reflective of the place that they're right. grown, which is going to give you better wines, which is going to give you more balance, more harmony. you sound like my owner.
Oh my gosh.
Sustainability, how do you go beyond organics? And we look at regenerative viticulture as the answer to that. And how do you bring sheep into the vineyard all year round? High wire trellising system. So, and we're in year three of it now. So
as you can see from the interview with Stephen, the passion is real, the passion is genuine, and it is playing out every single day in the decisions they're making. And so a couple of key points to reflect on. So Greystone is in the Canterbury region of the South Island, in fact, Waipara to be specific, but South Island of New Zealand. And he talked a lot about winds and that influence. And one of the things that allows them to be so organic, so regenerative, is those winds do keep things like fungus and mildews at bay and allow them to have really, really intense expressions, not only of the region, but of their organic, biodynamic, sustainable, and regenerative winemaking principles. The other thing is, you know, the limestone, the soil is so much of a part of what they are. In fact, Greystone actually draws its name from that unique limestone soil that they actually have across their vineyard. So you can truly see that the soil, the land, the plants, the vines are all living in perfect harmony together. So let's continue on and talk a little bit about some of their wines.
But we've also got Loire clones as opposed to MS, which is the standard clone. Most of New Zealand uses a clone called MS, Mass Select. It's a Bordeaux clone.
Okay.
That's where you get that thiol, pyrazine style, you know.
Right.
Green, grassy, slightly less nowadays because they just ripen it more. And then that lovely passion fruit, you know, tropical fruits. With the Loire clone, you get way less of that green grassiness and you get more of that tropical fruit. So we've actually just planted more Loire clone. We do have MS on the property, but we like the point of difference of having the Loire clones. But
yeah.
MS will give you 10 to 13 tons per hectare without even trying. The Loire clones are going to give you 4 to 6. So right. if
so
you're
it's
a grower
very big
or you're.
It's a big decision to do that.
It comes down to
it's
our focus
decision.
Is just quality,
yeah.
right? And
yeah.
we want to make the best possible wine that we can make from this site. So for the estate Pinot and the Chardonnay, for example, each block will be picked separately, barrel pressed separately, barreled separately, and then Domgo will go through and only take the best barrels from those particular blocks, and that's what he's going to make the estate wine
right.
From. So that might change year in, year out, because we're not trying to make the most wine we can. We're trying to make the best possible wine that we can.
And you're not trying to force to a specific, I'll call it a house style. You're letting Mother Nature, you already said that.
This is
you
how
know.
Far what? We've gone with that. We actually make a wine in the vineyard.
Okay.
So we bring a fermenter out from the winery. We put it in between the rows. We pick the fruit. Then we leave the fruit in that fermenter and it stays in the vineyard through the whole entire fermentation and then probably another 4 to 6 weeks after fermentation.
So whatever temperature Mother Nature is giving you is what
We've
your fermentation
extended the
temperature.
Vintage influence on the wine by another 2 months.
So is that a whole bunch then?
The first 30%
okay.
whole bunch. Then we use a destemmer.
Out
that
in
destemmer
the vineyard.
Never goes into the winery. It's and we basically put a jenny out here. The
okay.
first 30% whole bunch in. Jenny on top, the next 70% goes in, and then that's it. No,
and then you just leave it alone and come back and see what you do punch
quite.
Down.
only we wet the cap.
Yeah.
So
okay.
we'll do a little punch down just because otherwise you're going to get nasties. If it rains, yes, we put a lid on it. The other question I get is, do birds shit in it? Yes, birds do shit in it. Not massively.
I'm like, that's a chance. I mean, it's not like there's, yeah, it's not like you've got pigeons like.
So we started it in 2012, and the reason we did it is, how do you guarantee that the indigenous yeast that are going into the ferment are the indigenous yeast from the vine? So Don was like, I got it. And again, that's how wine used to be made, you know, 3,000 yeah. years ago. So and then we used to blend it into the estate Pinot. And then there was a big Pinot conference here, and Don got asked to talk about the vineyard ferment and the work we were doing. So we bottled it as a 2016. We bottled it as a single, we didn't blend it. We bottled it as the vineyard ferment, and it just blew people's minds. So since 2016, we've actually been bottling it as a standalone wine. Every year it's different. Every year it's a complete reflection of the vineyard, the vintage, the season. Cam Douglas, who's an MS in New Zealand, he coined he said a wine that truly speaks of a sense of time and place. And I really like that, because anyone can say we're using indigenous yeast. Anyone can say, oh, this wine was made in the vineyard. You know, we want to reflect terroir, but no one else is doing what we're doing in the sense of the vineyard. The wine is phenomenal.
It's the virgin.
So that's exactly when you need to rent the pod, so that you can overlook and watch the wine fermenting.
So we do probably two or three in here. We did one in the regen block, and then we do a couple up at Muddy as well. For the first time this year, Dom did a vineyard ferment with this Syrah, and I've tasted it out of barrel twice now, and I'm absolutely in love
blown
with it.
Away.
So whether or not we do the whole block as a what we call a vineyard ferment, we might do it this year. But it's become our USP in that sense of, if you want to tell the story of Greystone, the vineyard ferment kind of cements all of that, that we're trying to just reflect the vineyard in the wine. Like, you can, everyone says it, every marketing brochure you pick up for a winery says, you know, we're trying to reflect our terroir, this wine speaks of the land and everything, but
yes it does,
but we just thought, how do you guarantee that those yeast, those indigenous yeast? And then the flip side of that is actually, it is the ambient temperatures, like you say, that are controlling that ferment. So if you put it out on a day like today, that ferment's going to kick off, you know, in six hours.
Yeah.
Boom. You put it out on a day that's a bit windy, a bit overcast, inclement, and it might take 2 or 3 days to actually kick in. So we use no new oak. Probably 3 to 5 year old barrels. We do want some of that oak structure, but we don't want any oak flavor.
Yeah.
And then Dom does a selection back through all of those barrels, only takes the best barrels, and it will get blended. I was in Sydney just before Christmas. We did 17, 18, 19, 20, and 21 all in a flight. And Soms were blown away,
screaming.
And it shows people actually that wine should taste different. So previous to working here, I worked for Villa Maria, which is obviously huge, and private bin Villa Maria will taste the same as private bin Villa Maria every year in, year out, because that's what people want to drink. Oh, there'll be a little bit of differences, but and there's Maybe. Nothing
but they're making a style, they're making a house
totally.
style, and that's when I teach I call it the haves and the have-nots. So it's literally meaning that there's a difference between, you know, if you've got it all and you can really kind of create what you want, or you can let Mother Nature kind of throw a hand at you. And
that's exactly what the vineyard ferment gives us every year.
That's why.
So Stephen is super passionate about the vineyard fermentation process. Now let's move on and talk with the winemaker, Gavin Tate, and hear his side of the story and get a little bit deeper into the subject.
20 here.
Well, after my tour and getting to go, thank you so much for taking us all the way up to see the vineyard from sky high levels. And I really love the roller coaster ride. those are fun to me. I cannot wait to dive in. So what are we drinking first? But first, actually, let's talk a little bit about the DNA of Greystone from your perspective. I mean, you've been here 20 years. So what are you seeing today? Stephen, you talked about we're not doing what we're doing about today. We're doing it about the future. So
Where has that journey taken you in your 20 years here?
Quite a large evolution, I imagine. Right back in the start, we were just sort of figuring out our space in the world, I suppose. Trying to see what the site could produce and the style of wine that we would kind of best fit, given the soils and climate and terroir of our specific site. So there was a bit of a working with nature and the seasons and trying to figure out what the vines are capable of doing and where they want to take us. It's not about trying to fit ourselves into a specific style. It's about letting the wine show itself and bringing that forward as much as possible. So, you know, we were using pretty traditional techniques for the most part, but nowadays we're seeing an evolution to a bit more hands-off winemaking, keeping things easier. The shift to organics a number of years back has really kind of locked in together like the holistic approach of winemaking, from the caretaking of the land through to producing a delicious product.
So Pinots. So probably 2/3 of the vineyard is planted as Pinot Noir. Multiple different clones, different clone specific to soil type, and then also rootstock based on soil. But we don't, 30% of our product, sorry, 60% of our production isn't Pinot because our yields are so small that it doesn't translate
so
to that.
So planting doesn't translate to bottles.
No,
That
Norwester growing fruit here is quite challenging. You know, we're on that cusp of where you should be trying to grow grapes, which I personally think makes more interesting wines. But we have the estate, we have the Thomas Brothers, and then we have the vineyard ferment. So the wine that we actually do make in the vineyard. I'm going to, in terms of price, it goes estate, vineyard, ferment, Thomas Brothers.
Okay.
But I'm going to do the vineyard ferment before the estate, just because it's a little prettier. And I think it just allows you to see the nuances in the vineyard ferment. So I'll let Gav tell you about the the uniqueness of the vineyard ferment.
Can you?
So it all stems down to looking at our wild ferments and really trying to, I guess, showcase the fact that we are using wild ferments in our wine and that organic approach to winemaking, hands-off winemaking. So we've heard of people using what's known as a pied de cuve, where the week before you harvest your grapes, you go out, you pick a bucket load, you smash it up, leave it out in the vineyard and allow the natural yeast to start developing in that. Then when you go and pick your fruit, and you're ready to, say, inoculate your wine at the right time after a cold soak, you can throw that bucket of fermenting skins into your fermenter.
So it's like your mother on sourdough bread.
Yeah,
okay.
Basically the same thing. So we were thinking, well, why don't we make the bucket really big? So we thought we'd take a 1.5-ton plastic fermenter that we use as standard in our small batch winemaking process. Chucked it on a trailer, drove it out to the middle of the block, put it right in the middle, and then as the hand harvesting crew was coming through, they would bring their buckets direct to us. And we invested in a small generator driven destemmer that we could sit on top. You know, we'd throw some buckets in as whole bunches in the bottom, about 20% typically for this wine, and then we would destem the remainder on top. Then we seal the lid up and walk away and let nature take its course.
So you 100% sealed it?
So just put the lid on and just let it sit.
Okay, so the CO2 and stuff could still escape.
If it's a nice day, you take the lid off. If it's raining, you put the lid back on.
Yeah, I just thought of that when you said seal it. I'm like, did it explode on you?
So we do go back every day to check it. And in fact, with our harvest help that comes into the winery to help us look after the winery, it's always the first job they stick their hands up for.
Who's doing vineyard ferment run today? Me. Everyone wants to go out.
That's so fun. I mean, so literally you just have these big plastic buckets sitting in, and that goes against, it defies all odds of, you know, not winemaking, but just... That's a pretty high level of risk to just throw an entire harvest into a bucket in the middle of a field, in the middle of nature. and just say, "Hey, see you later."
Pretty much.
It's a big bucket.
Oh, so, yeah, no, so, yeah, I know.
One and a half ton.
It's not moving anywhere. But
the way we do most of our ferments anyway are small in that sort of size. So we do multiple smaller ferments as opposed to those bigger ones, block specific. So it's kind of an extension of that anyway. But it was how do you guarantee that the yeast that are fermenting this wine are the yeast from the vineyard, from that row. And it's a crazy concept, but the thing I love is that you've also then, because you're not controlling the ferment, it's all being controlled by the weather, by the seasons, right. You're actually extending the seasonal influence on the wine. So it's probably out there for 30 days fermenting, maybe another 4 weeks on skin. So everything that's happening in that period of time with that wine is controlled by Mother Nature, not by
So you're leaving it out there. Once fermentation, you're leaving it on the skins, you're leaving just totally
you want that polymerization of tannin, so it stays out there.
Yeah.
Then it's brought into the winery, pressed and run to 3 to 5 year old oak.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I will say that you know it's Pinot Noir when you taste it. But it does have this, and I don't mean potpourri effect as in something cloying, but it almost has like, I'll use Herbes de Provence instead. You know, kind of that, you think about Southern Rhone, or, you know, you think about the Garrigue, you think about everything that's out there. That's in this. I mean, which is not something I've ever had in a Pinot Noir expression. Usually it's more driven by purity. This one is very much driven by all the rest. That's cool. Yes, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Hello, wine lovers. Are you a business professional or service industry professional who's tired of feeling the pressure around a wine list? Well, fear no more. Introducing Wine Wise, your passport to confidence in any wine-centric situation. At WineWise, we understand wine can be intimidating even for the most seasoned pro. That's why we're here to take the fear out of wine. Our team trainings and corporate events are designed for business and service industry professionals who are ready to take their wine skills to the next level. So why wait? Visit our website at wine-wise.com, that's wise with a Z, and unlock the secrets to wine confidence today. WineWise, where fear meets finesse. Cheers to your wine journey.
It says a lot about our owners and the concept here. It's not how much wine can you make, it's quality, and how can we make the best possible wine. In terms of organics, it's not how can we be sustainable, it's how can we go beyond sustainability, how can we regenerate the land, how can we improve and the soil then better.
I mean, we did a whole episode on different fermentation vessels, and we did talk about big plastic tubs, but we never even thought about just dragging those puppies out into the middle of the vineyards, throwing the grapes in and saying, sayonara, baby, we'll see when you're done fermenting and percolating. I love that. Well, this has been so amazing. Is there any last message or thoughts that you'd like to leave our audience with? And we do have, the majority of our audience is still in the U.S., but we are having a growing international audience, which is really fun. So I'm glad we talked about the fact that, you know, Greystone as a brand is not what you would get in the U.S. But
Same wines, just
different labels. So we're going to have to look for the different labels. But any other thoughts that you'd like to share?
Just really want to reiterate our organic philosophies, I suppose. You know, we're here to produce the very best fruit and wine that we can make from this property. We think this is a really special corner of the earth, and we'd love you all to come and visit.
I would love to come back and bring a lot of people with me. I'm sure I'm going to have to find a different chauffeur next time, but because he's going to want to drink more wines.
I echo that. Then if you can drink organic. There was a bit of stigma, you know, maybe 10 years ago around organic wines, you know, were funky and this and that, but ask where your fruit's coming from, learn more about the wineries, how they're making it, how they're growing it, what they're doing to be more sustainable, more organic, are they farming regeneratively? Start asking those questions, because you and as a consumer can make a difference, and you if you think you can't, you can. Every time you choose to purchase a bottle of organic wine from a small producer like us, you're making a conscious decision to, I'll be cheesy, to save the planet, right? So if you can eat organic, drink organic, I fully recommend it and say go for it, because it does actually, you as a consumer can make a difference. It matters where your grapes are grown and where they come from. So I'll get off my soapbox.
No, I love that. I love that. And again, I think the regenerative farming here, to me, that's like taking that organic one step further, and really the flora, the fauna, the spiders, the bugs, the sheep, the manure, it's all working together to create something magical. So
I personally believe sustainability's lost its value as a term. There's too much greenwashing going on, so it's about how do you go beyond that? How do you go beyond sustainability and regenerative farming, which is
super exciting.
That's the direction we're going in. We're pioneering it here in New Zealand with some high wire, trying to have sheep in the vineyard all year round, and various other things. And actually, once we make that work, we're not gonna try and copyright it or anything. We want to share it with the world, because we believe that's the right way to farm. And there's they call it the regenerative mindset. It's about sharing that information and helping the farm next to you to be able to achieve the same as you, and then sharing that information and creating this web, if you like, of knowledge that's
spread the wealth.
100%. So
love that.
Thank you for coming to see us as well. So
that's fantastic. Well, we have a saying that we close out all of our podcasts with, and I know I'm the only official woman at the table, but we're going to do it anyway.
Darcy.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Darcy. Was she still at the table?
She's
feet? Okay. Smooth,
yeah.
Well, we say, Psalm Women Talk Wine. Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I hope you enjoyed our time with the team at Greystone as much as I did. I do apologize that some of the clips are a little bit choppy, but when you are doing interviews live in a vineyard with lots of wind and moving around, sometimes you don't catch all the subjects as well as you'd like. So thank you for your patience. But Greystone, and if you're looking for Greystone in the U.S., Gray's Peak is what they are branded. You will absolutely love their wines and be amazed at how beautifully they are reflecting the sense of place through their passion for regenerative farming. So without further ado, I'm going to wrap it up. And next time, Charisse will be back by my side. But it wouldn't be Some Women Talk Wine if we didn't complete the episode with... Because some women talk wine. Cheers!